was actually saying very little. And that's really disappointing for me, because the people in this room and throughout the valley elected you and need to hear your voice. And I understand that John might have more years of experience, but I think you should be the primary person responding to the questions being put forward. And if you need John, or I'm sorry, the other gentleman as well, as a backup for pieces of information that you don't have, maybe they could offer that. But you are a representative.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, great.
Hey,
Bonnie. Looking like John was.
You mean this guy?
What I said earlier that you missed was the fact that this was supposed to be an information gathering session, because there's lots that I need to understand. We wanted to have the dialogue back and forth between what we already know, or what I'm trying to sort out, and the people on the ground. I don't want to do it on Facebook. I want to do it in a community hall. I want to look you in the eye and have the conversation. I want your feedback. Otherwise, how am I going to be able to assess this when I go to Victoria to make decisions? It isn't all just about what's written on a piece of paper. I'm a firm believer in face-to-face consultation, and I don't have all the answers. But I do want to hear your voices so that when we're discussing it and I'm reading material, I can help discern those decisions. So that's why I've been listening. That's why I wanted to listen to you tonight. And yes, I agree, we need to have a lot more of these. That's what we need to do. If it's uncomfortable, well, so be it. But the bottom line is, we need to look people in the eye. We need to have a face-to-face conversation. And I agree with the chief from, I'm sorry, Megan, I'm going to have to get your card because I can't pronounce all the things. That's what I need to learn. This is my home. I was born and raised here, with a lot of you sitting in this room tonight. So I completely understand it. And as Bruce will tell you, and as John will tell you too, the North is different than the South. And I agree with everything you said about standing together and having a different path for Northerners, because we are resilient. And I don't want to lose that. I want to embrace that, but I want to know what you're thinking and feeling so that we can have those discussions. So I completely agree.
I'm glad to hear your voice.
Sometimes the voice don't let me have it, but I'll take over.
I don't have a question. I just have a position, I guess, and what my understanding is, because I'm not well educated on DRIPA. But my understanding is that Canada as a nation adopted the UN Declaration of Independence of Indigenous Rights. And that was, I don't know, before 2020, several years back. And Canada took some time to actually sign on to that declaration, I understand. One of the few countries in the world that sort of bought to begin with, but did finally decide, yes, they should support that declaration. From that, my understanding is that the provinces then are expected to be able to implement the Canadian adoption of the UN Declaration of Indigenous Rights by forming frameworks so that the principles in the declaration can actually be enacted on the ground. And I have yet to look at what those things are. Luckily, somebody brought a handout, and I would recommend if you've got one with you, pick it up and take it home and read it, because it does state the recommendations that were made and what it would mean. And I just flipped and came to water. I thought, oh my God, it's talking about water, like one of our most important resources. So I need to go back and read that, and I'd recognize other people do. Without a framework to build on, it's like our skeleton. We need a framework. We can't simply resort to bit by bit dealing with conflicts as they come along and differences. Build the framework, present it. If it doesn't work well, make a few changes. But do it with all the parties involved, not with repealing it as the conservative policy is right now, or making amendments, or as the NDP government are doing in BC right now, suggesting amendments that might not be suitable or accepted by First Nations throughout BC. So I think rather than the repeal, you might go back to your comment about possibly amendments, working with the First Nations in BC for any amendments that might come. So that's my position. I support DRIPA as it is, and hope that it stays in place. Tweaks for changes would be great. Make it better than it is now. It's like.
We get to get a couple of wills, a couple of laughs, and we get
Tiwai, Kaskast. My ancestral name is Hapwilasa. I come from the house of Wiget, from the Fireweed clan. I'm honored to be here on Wet'suwet'en territory. My mom is Tsimshian from Kitkatla. My dad is Kiksan. He was the latest of the Dalgamukh people. He held that name, and I'm proud of that. I just wanted to talk a little bit about repealing DRIPA. It's not going to happen. You can try. You can take it to court. DRIPA and the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples are the foundation of human rights. Nobody can give you your human right. Nobody can take it away. They're inherent. You can't do it. You can try. And it's going to cost the government millions, hundreds of millions, as we all know. They've been fighting in courts for decades, hundreds of millions of dollars, fighting indigenous peoples for our basic human rights. And I'll tell you one thing, I want to move on to the Cowichan decision. The Cowichan decision is just the first of many to come. And how we deal with that decision is how we will move forward as a province. The Cowichan don't want your land. They're not going to take your house. We know how that feels. It's not nice. I think what the Cowichan want is just recognition. Recognition that this is Cowichan land. This is indigenous land. Maybe a little bit of tax money. I'm not saying we should increase taxes, but a little bit of taxation so that our communities can be better. We can have better schools. We can have better health systems and on and on and on. Now, I hear all the fear-mongering coming from the stage. Oh, my God, you know, the economy's going to crash. Oh, goodness. It's not going to happen. The sun's going to rise tomorrow. We're going to go on. We're going to go to Safeway. We're going to, you know, hunt in Safeway, if that's where you hunt. But all this fear-mongering is just division. He's up there sitting about, talking about, we need to come together. This is all a division. Right in front of you. The Cowichan don't want your land. They want recognition. And I can't speak for them, but that's what I see. They just want recognition. The Cowichan isn't devaluing your land. Who's devaluing your land? The government and the banks. It's not the Cowichan. Cowichan didn't say your land is worth nothing anymore. It's the government and the banks. These people, right here. These are the people that are creating division, sitting in front of you talking about how we should bring everybody together. There's a prime example of how rights and title can work with the Haida. I'm good friends with a lot of the Haida. I work with them. The Haida had a plan. It's called The Rising Tides, and you should read it if you get the opportunity. The Haida 98% control, not 100, John, like you said earlier. They didn't want the other 2%. I work with them, I know that. They have 98% control over the island. And they worked with the municipalities, they worked with industry, and they got them all on board so that they had a plan that worked for everybody. And it does. They didn't have to go to court. They didn't have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars litigating over decades, like the province of Canada likes to do with Indigenous peoples. Spending your hard-earned tax dollars. And trust me, I pay taxes every day. People think Indigenous peoples don't pay taxes. I do. Every day. So it's time for the governments, if you want to create certainty, you always talk about the uncertainty of the Indigenous problem. If you want to create certainty, it's time to deal with rights and title.
First of all, I'd like to just thank everybody for being here. You know, it's beautiful to see so many people that take an interest in, you know, the circumstances that we're facing right today. But anyway, Cindy gets Sigramanak, Sakwazek, Kinizek, Skyzek, and ladies and gentlemen that are here. You know, I just, I try to stay out of politics. That's one thing, but I'm always going to get dragged into it somehow. And like, what I feel all the time is I don't vote because I'm Indigenous, because your governments don't represent us. In no way, shape, or form do they represent Indigenous people. So I feel like every time as a hereditary chief, my name is Chief Zahale. I'm of the Sun House of the Laksamisu clan, which is from the Greater House of the Killer Whale. These people, the fellow that spoke before me is my brother. You know, in our culture, we're the same clan. And one of the things that we found, it was 1997 when we got the Delgamuukw decision, where the Supreme Court stated very, very clearly that the Gitxsan and Wet'suwet'en territories preceded the federal and provincial government. They said that our territories have never been extinguished, but they didn't give a decision. You know, how could a colonial government make a decision on people that have been here for thousands of years? So these are the things that we're faced with. But it did very clearly say that we have interest in the land. And John talked about reconciliation really, really poorly. Because what reconciliation is, when we figure out how many square kilometers of our brothers, white brothers and sisters here, whether you're first, second, third, fourth generation, all the farms, all the municipalities, how many square kilometers is all of that? I should ask how many thousands of square kilometers of land, Wet'suwet'en land, that's been alienated from us. I'm from Wet'suwet'en. You know what we're allocated? We're allocated 2 square miles that we all have to share. 2 square miles. You know, I've had many non-Indigenous people ask me, oh, you got such good land, you got this and that. I said, yeah, 2 square miles. So when John talked about reconciliation, Molly's very familiar. She's building a village out at 44 Unistoten's building a village out on our territory. And we, the Lac-Samish, are also building a village out there. These are villages that were historical villages in the 1800s. And we're reconstructing them. And I had government officials coming out and asking me, what are you doing? I told them all this talk about reconciliation. I said, this is what reconciliation looks like on the ground. And I think there that the political parties that get into BC after Gilgamesh, they have a duty. You know, they signed an agreement that we haven't completed. It was an MOU, very clearly stating that all house groups have legal jurisdiction over their territories and to govern them. That's reconciliation. And the provincial government could do a declaration giving us the 22,000 square kilometers and working with us. The willingness to do that will never happen. And I'll tell you why it would never ever happen. Because our resources, underground and above ground, they've already taken hundreds of billions of dollars of resources off our land. And that's why they do not want to make a deal with Indigenous people. Because there's just too much wealth under the ground. And they want it. So what happens? How do you deal with that? When you let greed from these big corporations and government run and take control over our resources. So I think it's really important there that we all work together. In the 70s, the Wet'suwet'en proposed a tripartite government, and we just got laughed at. We said we'll work with all the municipalities, we'll work with the provincial government. We don't care about the federal government. They were the ones that created all of this stench, all of the non-trust in everything that we have ever tried to work for. But I think it's really important that we do work together, like you said, John. But just saying sorry is not enough. Getting rid of UNDRIP is not enough. We've been here for thousands of years. And we will be here for thousands of years more. So I think, yes, we as communities have to work together. We spent the last 35 years working with your school boards, working with your municipalities, Hazleton, Smithers, Tolkwa, Houston, Burns Lake. 35 years building a really close, loving relationship. You know, trying to get rid of all of this systemic racism that's been put upon us. And if we all work together, we could do it. We just have to respect one another. We call that wagus. That's respect. You know, when we could communicate and just respect one another, and I'm sure, yeah, we'll always have differences, but I mean, that's just human nature. It's just human nature to have differences. But yes, I always look at our people as being very respectful. Even Father Maurice there, he was an anthropologist before a priest. And he was the one, when he came here and he saw our culture, he's the one that coined the term about the Gixxan and the Wet'suwet'en as noble savages. Yeah, we were savages, but we were noble. You know, what a contrast. So, you know, when I look at this, I think, yes, John, you are barking up the wrong tree. I think you should use UNDRIP and try to make it work. And I think that we could really work together. I don't know if you remember me there. We got into little clickers once in a while on Facebook. Okay. I'd like to thank all of you. And lots of love to all of you here. And thank you so much for coming and being a part of this open house. Okay, lots of love.
I've got a minute, literally, so I won't take up much time. As reported to the Vancouver Sun, September 29th, 2024, in a statement that was posted to the Conservatives' website in February of that year, quote, I'm sorry, established for conditions in other countries, not Canada. Whether or not you wrote that statement, it was still said, and it was still posted to the Conservative website. I had a lot more that I wanted to say. For the sake of brevity, I won't. What I do want to say is that it's disappointing and it's saddening to see a repetition of the same mistakes by politicians in this province over and over and over again while claiming to be categorically oblivious and innocently negligent of the reality that is lived by so many people. And to sit up here, the three of you, respectfully, with zero Indigenous representation on your panel, with zero conversation in advance, it is disappointing to me as an individual who has lived here for nearly a decade. There are so many things that have been said tonight that I have taken issue with respectfully, and I've written it down, and I unfortunately didn't have a chance to say 99% of it. But you can't eat money if we're going to provide a robust natural environment for the future, if and when things hit the fan, as Mr. Hugg said. We need to start thinking seriously about bringing our legislative frameworks and environmental protections out of the dark ages, that is to say the atomic era of the mid-20th century, and we can't afford to put spillways from coal mines directly into Wet'suwet'en Kwa'an in the event of a flood. It has been over 0 degrees Celsius for the past 2 weeks at the beginning of February. And if you needed a louder canary in the coal mine, I genuinely do not understand how you cannot hear the shrieking yet. This is a problem for all of us. And I know that I'm about to be cut off, so respectfully, please don't. My one question to yourself, Mr. Rustad, for whom are there too many teeth to the original draft of DRIPA? And I ask that in earnest, because as has been said by some other folks, it seems as though the largest objection is when the power of the British Columbia or Canadian colonial governments to veto projects not going through is when there is some limitation of power that is seen as not being appealing. The people, regardless of their indigeneity, need to have a voice. And there needs to be an ability to veto certain projects. Perpetually stating that things are in the public interest while forcing projects through is not the way forward with any population, Indigenous or otherwise. Tabi Masai.
All right, we're going to bring this to a close here. There's some more, but I refuse to end on the voice of John Rustad, Sharon Hartwell, or the guy from Abbotsford. I think ending on a voice for people is more meaningful. So that person as well, I'm not sure, but if you are the same person who got cut off during the open house on the Bulkley Valley Harm Reduction Society, let's chat. If you want to come on and say your piece here, I'd be happy to have you. So That is the end of this episode, more or less. I've got 5 minutes here to do some housekeeping and cleanup, and then let you all go on with the rest of your days. I have permission now from the person who live streamed Dolly Alfred to post the entire thing on YouTube. So I'll be editing it into one clip and putting it on the Marsh's YouTube channel. You can you'll find links for it everywhere. I will send it around and post it around. Frankly, in the interest of keeping things in a place where they're not going to be taken down, at least by me. And you know, Facebook, it has its issues, and I mean, YouTube has its issues too, but just in the interest of keeping that record, I will, be putting it on YouTube. It truly like warms my cold, dead heart to see the public response to this, because on its face, it was bad. It was a malicious act on the part of the Conservative Party. And what I think the plan had been was to fill a building with the Conservative base and rile them up and scare them into fighting against Indigenous people and tearing apart a community. I cannot see any other reason to do this in the way that it was done other than to cause division. You know, and for all the narrative about coming together and, oh, it's so important how we work together, in no universe do I see that that is the intention of the Conservative Party of BC. I can't reconcile that. And, I want people to remember, like, these are the people that you voted for. Some of you, right? If you're listening to this, you voted for people who want to cause harm and division under the guise of personal wealth. I think the last person that spoke said you can't eat money. And, yeah, I mean, that's as good a thesis statement as any. All right, folks, this is the 99th episode of Syrup Moves Radio. Holy crap. Next week is episode 100. If you would like to send a message to the show, I will play it on the air. SyrupMooseRecords@gmail.com. If you want, you can send it to me on Facebook. If you're friends with me on Facebook, whatever, I don't care. If you can text it to me, if you have my number. If you like this show for any reason, or think that it should exist or continue to exist, let me know. I would love to hear from you. Again, syrupmooserecords@gmail.com. Please send me your messages so that I have content for the 100th episode. I think at this moment I have like one, so it might be kind of a sad note, but anyway, I appreciate you listening to this. We're going to play the anarchist hymn again. I think it's important and useful, and yeah, thank you for listening, and thank you so much to every single person who went out and would not take that lying down. I think that there's so much strength in that, and I thank you sincerely. This is the anarchist hymn. We'll be back next week, episode 100.
In an anarchist dwelling, so humble and so mean, oh, smell the pungent odor of nitroglycerine. And while busy making fuses and filling cans with nail, the little Slavic children set up this mournful wheel.
Well, it's
Sister Jenny's turn to throw the bomb. Oh, well, the last one, it was thrown by Brother Tom. Oh, poor mother's aim is bad, and the cops say all know Dad. So it's Sister Jenny's turn to throw the bomb.
Sister Jenny, she came back and stood by her mother's side. Her little eyes were shining with a sort of girlish pride. She said, oh, tell me, mother, don't you think that I did well?
Well, yes, you did, and bless you, child, you blew them all to pieces. Well,
it's Sister Jenny's turn to throw the bomb. Oh, well, the last one, it was thrown by Brother Tom. Oh, poor mother's aim is bad, and the cops, they all know Dad. So it's Sister Jenny's turn to throw the bomb. Mother's aim is bad, and the cops, they all know Dad. So it's Sister Jenny's turn.